Now, if you have trouble sleeping at night, he might be able to help. He says that sleep aids we traditionally rely on don't work, and he's here to give us some expert tips on how to guarantee a good night's sleep. Welcome to the show, Guy.
Thank you. Thanks for having me.
So you run your own sleep clinic. Did that start because you yourself was once a victim of insomnia?
It didn't start because of that. The irony is that my insomnia began when I was actually doing research into sleep disorders.
Oh,
and,
no.
Simply because when you're doing sleep research, you're spending all night up watching other people sleep. And consequently, like any of the listeners who do shift work will know, that doing shift work regularly, day in, day out, week in, week out, unfortunately disturbs your natural circadian rhythm and disrupts your natural sleep. And that's where sort of my insomnia began, yeah.
Yeah, it's all about your body clock, isn't it?
Absolutely, yes. Yeah. Your body clock is this incredible 24-hour scheduling device which tells us when to eat and when to sleep and when to be awake, etc. And if you're constantly disturbing it simply by, say, having a lie-in on the weekend, you can disrupt the quality of your sleep.
Yes, of course. And is it all under the umbrella of insomnia, Guy? I mean, some people can fall to sleep straight away but then keep waking up. Some people can take ages to fall to sleep and then stay asleep. Is it all a form of insomnia?
So insomnia in general just means difficulty sleeping. So, you know, everyone on the planet will experience insomnia at some point in their lives. And that could be because they've, you know, had a heavy training session, they got a stinking cold, or, you know, or had a stressful day at work. But generally, the stressor it passes and people's sleeping patterns return back to normal. But chronic insomnia, which is what we specialize at the sleep school, is something different. And that's where it lasts longer. It lasts, you know, it's normally where we say it's a difficulty falling to sleep, maintaining sleep, or waking up earlier than you would prefer, or experiencing unrefreshing sleep for a period greater than 3 months. And it's often where there's a worry about not sleeping, which perpetuates the level of sleeplessness.
Yeah, a vicious circle. I can get that, yeah. And why do you say that traditional remedies don't work? I mean, we've all heard of the warm baths, the milky drinks, maybe lavender, but you say none of them are any good.
Well, I think it's important to be clear. So I have two hats. I have my general population hat, which, you know, for the vast majority of the population, we're not sleeping very well at the moment. But that's personally through sort of personal choice and sort of poor behaviors. And so for all of those people, actually, you know, making sleep a priority in your life and drinking a little less coffee and alcohol and exercising a little bit more, those things are all really helpful. So that's really good. But for any chronic insomnia sufferers listening, what they'll know is that often, you know, often it's the complete opposite. Often for those individuals, they're lying in bed awake going, well, I've done everything. You know, I've run a marathon today. I've done some yoga.
Yeah.
I've had no caffeine or alcohol, but I'm still not sleeping. And you see, for those trying too hard, struggling to get to sleep, inadvertently or paradoxically pushes sleep further away. So for chronic insomnia, it is about learning how to let go of struggling with your sleeplessness.
So for a chronic insomniac, is it physical? I mean, we all know if we've got things on our mind and we're feeling stressed, you don't sleep. That's coming from the mentality side. But is it physical? I mean, is there something physically wrong with somebody who's a chronic insomniac that needs fixing?
That's a really good point. So when we talk about chronic insomnia, we say insomnia is psychophysiological.
Ah.
So I don't think it's, I never want to say something's wrong. You know, it's not, because a lot of our clients will go, I'm broken, I can't be fixed.
Oh.
Well, the good news is that you absolutely can be. Sleep is a learned skill. And we often say that everyone who's come to see us has become very good at sleeping badly. And so on a physiological level, that could mean that their body clock is out of sync. It could mean that they're perhaps, you know, they've learned to sleep more in the daytime rather than the nighttime. It could be that this, you know, their sleep drive is wrong. So they're perhaps they're sleeping too much at the wrong times. But again, for a lot of chronic insomniacs, it's that psychological aspect. It's the worry about not sleeping which keeps it fueled. And so it's often what happens for chronic insomniacs is that they've just retrained their brain to associate the nighttime with wakefulness and struggle. Also, basically, after repeated nights of not sleeping, their brain, as they move towards the bedroom or they wake up in the middle of the night, they're suddenly filled with panic because their brain now associates the bedroom with being awake and struggling. And that can feel really sort of confusing and even sort of, you know, very scary.
Yeah, it's totally understandable. You would panic, wouldn't you? And you think, oh, no, not again. I've got hours left yet.
That's exactly it. And for many individuals, that can be how it starts. They have a poor night because of, you know, they were thinking about an argument. They just couldn't switch off. And then the next day they go, God, that wasn't very nice at all. I hope it doesn't happen. Mm-hmm. And of course, because they've already sort of, it's almost like the seed of doubt has been sown in their mind. And that means that it does happen again. And then the next night it happens again. And that's where the brain goes, oh, it's bedtime. This is where we're meant to be anxious. This is when we're meant to be worried. So your brain automatically learns to put you into a state of fight or flight. And that's where, at the sleep school, we pioneered this unique acceptance-based approach where you learn to move towards the discomfort. You learn to notice those worrisome thoughts that are showing up. And rather than battling to get rid of them, which just amplifies the problem, you learn to accept them, use acceptance-based tools, which retrains this amygdala, your worry center in your brain, that actually it's all right. It's safe to sleep.
So for those that, obviously, we're in Spain. For those that can't get to the sleep school, can you give some tips as to how to do that, how we can train ourselves to sleep better?
Absolutely. Well, the first thing I should say is that all of the services that the sleep school provide are available digitally now.
So
you can actually get a Skype, you know, if you wanted a one-to-one test, you can actually get it via Skype, or that the Sleep School for Insomnia app provides the entire program, you know, in a nice sort of handy app format. So, you know, I would always suggest, you know, if people are struggling, then, you know, just go to the sleepschool.org website and you can get all the help you need. But, you know, what do we need? You know, ultimately, it's about learning how to let go of struggling. And that's, you know, some simple things that you can do. So the first one is recognizing what is it that you're doing that might be getting in the way. For many of our clients, they have sort of like almost like a cemetery of past techniques that they're keeping by their bed. You know, they go, I have to do X, Y, and Z, otherwise I won't sleep. So learning how to, you know, almost become aware of what they might be doing, which inadvertently could be fueling the problem, is the first step. The next step is learning to be a little bit more mindful of the thoughts and feelings that are showing up. And so we teach basic sort of mindfulness techniques to enable people to notice the thoughts and emotions that are showing up in their body, but without trying to get rid of them. And that's the sort of the paradoxical thing, that you're not trying to get rid of it, you're learning to actually allow it to be there, and then that transforms the way the brain relates to it. And then we use something called cognitive diffusion as well. This is for some of those really sticky thoughts, the if I don't sleep, I won't be able to cope, or if I don't sleep, I won't be able to perform, or I'll look or feel awful. And so giving them shorthand names, such as it's the coping thought, the looks thought, the feeling thought, the perform thought, and being able to go, oh, my mind is telling me the coping thought right now, means that you alter the context. It enables you to step outside of it. Because for many clients, it's their desperation to try and get rid of the thoughts or the anxiety, which keeps their thoughts and anxiety fueled. So actually what we're doing there is we're learning how to step outside, to notice the fact that it's perfectly normal to have them and let them go.
Yeah.
So those are the first three steps that I would take someone through.
That's great advice, great advice. It doesn't happen to me very often nowadays, but occasionally it does, so I'll certainly give that a go. For people who literally just desperate for a good night's sleep, would you ever suggest sleeping pills?
Yeah, well, it all depends on the context, because everything that we do at the Sleep School is 100% non-drug based. And the reason for that is because over 80% of the people who come to see us are taking medication and trying to come off because they've become reliant on it. And it's a sleep aid which they're now reliant on. So, you know, absolutely, we would always try to ensure that people learn how to sleep naturally without the reliance, because as soon as they become reliant on something, it steals a bit of their trust in their natural ability to sleep. However, there will always be, you know, those examples. If someone has is going through a traumatic experience, then, you know, taking a short course of sleeping medication can be a really helpful thing to do to enable them to get some sleep and to ensure that it doesn't amplify the problem problem sort of further. But it's always, you know, sleeping medication is not a long-term solution. It's, you know, the NICE guidelines recommend it as a short-term treatment to help people sort of get through a traumatic experience in order to, but supporting it with behavioural therapy.
Yes.
And so that would be the most important thing to do.
And are women in general worse sleepers than men?
Unfortunately, yes. If we look at our audience, whether that be one of the live workshops that we run, for example, we will always see sort of like a 70-30 split. And there are two obvious reasons for this. The one is the hormonal makeup. So women naturally have two hormones, progesterone and estrogen, which have powerful sedative and stimulant effects. And they obviously alter on a monthly basis, on a with pregnancy, with menopause, etc. And that means that therefore women are more susceptible to changes in the sort of the drive to sleep. So that's the first thing. And then also females do have a higher tendency for worry as well. And unfortunately, worry is insomnia's best friend. So generally within the insomnia population, we see it affects, it's around sort of 70% female and 30% male.
And presumably there are some obvious things that we've all heard about, like you shouldn't have your TV on before bedtime, or you shouldn't go on your iPhone or, you know, your iPad or whatever. Presumably that is all true.
Yeah, absolutely. So this is where the distinction between sort of someone who's could do with just improving their sleep and a chronic insomniac, and they're two very distinct groups. So, for example, you know, for the majority of the population, so we've surveyed 25,000 working adults in the UK, and we know that people, 53% of those say they wake up feeling completely unrefreshed in the morning. So half of the population of the UK are saying they're waking up feeling unrefreshed. And this is because, you know, everyone could benefit from perhaps, you know, being a little bit more active, drinking a little bit less caffeine, you know, less alcohol, having a better wind down routine, gradually preparing the brain for sleep, reducing the amount of light levels that come from sort of our phones and our tellies, keeping the TVs out of the bedroom. So all of this sort of basic information is really helpful for the vast majority of us. But as I said before, for the chronic insomniac, often they've done that and more. And so that's not, you know, that's not the problem. But for the majority of us, it's, you know, if you want to wake up a little bit more refreshed in the morning, do make sleep a bit more of a priority in your life and adhere to a few more sleep hygiene guidelines.
And is it important? Is it important to get a good deep night's sleep?
Sorry, say that again.
Is it, you said, you know, make it a priority. Is it important? I mean, if some of us go to sleep and keep waking up, but we're not insomniacs, but, you know, we don't get into a really deep sleep for 8 hours. Is it important for our health to do this?
Well, this is a really good question because, you know, there's a lot of sort of talk around sleep at the moment. And it's sort of, you know, understanding, well, why is this? And it's because we've now got two decades worth of research that shows that sleep is the most powerful health providing activity that you can do in your life. It's one of the three pillars, you know, sort of eating healthily, moving healthily and sleeping healthily. But actually, we now know that, you know, sleep is not only helps us to perform at our best, you know, every single day. So in a sort of mental capacity, it helps us to be, helps us to do what we're doing now, to communicate, to, you know, to think up questions, to be creative, to be motivated, all of those kind of things. But then it's also really important in the long term. It helps to clean our brains. We know it helps to keep our heart healthy. It lowers our blood pressure. It manages our blood glucose and reduces our risk of diabetes. It boosts our immunity and lowers our risk of cancer. So, you know, it is this incredible nighttime sort of repairing, recharging, resetting process that many of us kind of take for granted. And actually, I really hope that, you know, with all the research that's coming out, people will sort of take heed a little bit, make sleep a bit more of a priority in their life, and see it as a tool which perhaps is even more helpful than, you know, sort of eating a healthy diet and moving in order to be able to, you know, live an optimum healthy lifestyle.
Yeah, it's interesting because we hear that all the time. In order to be healthy, we have to eat well and exercise. Nobody says you have to have a good night's sleep, do they?
Well, I think that the way I always describe it is that in the 90s, we learned, 80s and 90s, we definitely learned how to move. You know, there's lots of information around that. In the noughties, it was superfoods. You couldn't move for a blueberry or, you know, sort of mention around some sort of superfood. And now it's sleep's turn. This is the turn of sleep to get out there. And that's why we're having this conversation.
Yes, and I'm glad it is. We need to do that, absolutely. So your website for people who want to try and do something digitally is thesleepschool.org, is that correct?
That's correct, yes.
And I believe go on, Guy.
I was just going to say, if people, you know, it doesn't matter. If people are interested in any sort of area, we've got the Sleep School blog as well, which, you know, tells you everything from the impact of blue light from your phones to shift working to pregnancy to young children. So there's, you know, lots of a big, good resource there that people can get. Lots of great advice.
Yes, definitely. It sounds very interesting. And I believe you bought out a book a couple of years ago, the Sleep Book, How to Sleep Well Every Night. Is that still available?
That's right. Yeah. So the sleep book it specializes in chronic insomnia, and so that takes you through the 5-step process that we use in our clinic and our workshops. But that can also be the app provides a digital form of that and has lots of guided audios as well, taking people through. So that's the Sleep School for Insomnia app. So it depends, you know, how you like to digest content. If you want to read it, you can read it on the book. If you want to sort of, watch sort of lots of videos and hear guided audios, then you can get that on the app. Otherwise, you can, you know, if you are in London, then you can come to a live workshop and meet lots of individuals who are going through something similar, which is a very powerful experience as well.
Yeah, marvellous. I shall certainly call in to see you next time I'm in London.
I hope so. Thanks a lot.
Thank you so much for being on the show. Thank you, Guy Meadows. Bye-bye.
Bye. Thank you.